Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. As usual, I'm your host, Cody, and we're back at it for the month of November. We're talking about awesome cartoons with awesome toys. So, as I promised, this week and next week are the two big ones. This week is Transformers. Next week will be G.I. Joe, so tune in then. So Transformers, for the folks who don't know, started off as a toy that actually spurred from the popularity of G.I. Joe's through a Japanese company who had a toy line called Micro Man in Dioclone. Those ones were essentially the formation of G.I. Joe. We'll go into more of that next week. But due to the success of G.I. Joe, the G.I. Joe toys, Hasbro basically went with and partnered with the Japanese company. Well, they bought the company Dioclone Toys, who made those, and then partnered with a company called Takara, and then hired Jim Shooter and Dennis O'Neill to basically create a backstory. Those two gentlemen were then basically the fathers of a lot of what we know as the origins. And then Bob Budiansky was the actual creator of the Transformers characters, giving names and personalities to many of the unnamed figures from the Dioclone figure line. And then that basically was born the Generation 1, as it was called later on, not right away, because they didn't plan on more than that. The Generation 1, if for the folks who don't know, is a retroactive term given to all the Transformers that were created between the years 1984 and 1993. That includes the comic books from Marvel, the cartoon series, the movie, as well as various amounts of other things in there. But the Generation 1 Transformers are everyone's favorites. You have Optimus Prime. You have Megatron, Bumblebee. You had, all the ones you do know of that everyone knows are all part of that group in the Generation 1. Generation 1 actually spans two different series of Transformers. They have the Series 1 and Gen 1 was all of your really familiar ones. So Optimus Prime, Bumblebee, Megatron, Ultra Magnus was in there. Starscream, Skywarp, Thundercracker. You had Soundwave, Shockwave was in there. Cliffjumper, Windchanger, Gears, Huffer, Bumblebee, Brawn. I'm just reading off a bunch of the names. And then the Series 2 introduced a lot of the other ones that, really kind of... they did a relaunch of them. They had the Dinobots, the Omnibots, the Insecticons, the Destructicons, what else was in that one? There's a couple other ones I remember too. Anyways, and so that was the Series 2, and they had different variations of them throughout the years. And I think all the way up to, I want to say 89, no, 90, was the final year of in the U.S. market for Transformers. And they did a bunch of figures in there. You had so many of the Gen 1s that were just amazing in general. And it helped because the show was awesome too. And of course, if you don't know the show was amazing. The movie, Transformers the movie, which was the animated movie based on the original TV series, not the 2007 live-action movie Transformers. This is The Transformers, the movie, which is a super dumb name. It should be Transformers, the movie, or The Transformers movie, but whatever. I you know, that's someone's idea that was long gone from now. Still one of the best American-based animated movies. I say that because, if I'm not mistaken, it was still produced out of Japan, but it was written for American audiences and shown in theaters in theaters in the United States. It wasn't like one of those, you know, animated movies. It was huge. I mean, because in Japan, Japanese animation, there's a ton of just animated movies that are amazing from the same time frame, if not, and earlier. But this was one of the American ones that was amazing and phenomenal. So the movie itself had an amazing voice cast to go along with. So you had the original Optimus Prime, voiced by Peter Cullen, who actually did the live action Transformers as well as the TV show, the various versions of the TV show. But you had names of, he also did a ton of different voices on there, as well as Frank Welker, who is most famously known for doing Megatron's voice. But in this, you had Judd Nelson, who did Hot Rod / Rodimus Prime. You had Leonard Nimoy, who did Galvatron, who later on actually did a voice in the live-action movies as well. But then you had Eric Idle from Monty Python in there. You had so many really good voice actors. I'm not going to name off all the names. I'm just going to go by the... Orson Welles did a voice in it. He was the voice of the main protagonist, Unicron, in it, which is nuts to think you have an animated movie that has you have Orson Welles... like War of the Worlds, Orson Welles, doing a voice in it, and it's fucking mind blowing. But there's a bunch of them. If you know voice actors, there's a ton of them. So I'm not going to go through them, but those are the big names that you're going to know in there. So it's kind of nuts to know that there was a bunch in there, a bunch of voice actors, really good and amazing, just movie in its own right, and really what the live action movies definitely were. Attempting to do, but just never grabbed the magic of this one. And to me, if you ask me, they should do a live action version of this one. And really, the only live action is going to be the few and far between human characters that are in it, because there's only, if I remember correctly, two. You have Spike Witwicky, hence the name you probably know from the live action movie, and you have Daniel Witwicky. Those are the only two humans in the whole movie, and the rest are all just the various Transformers, the Autobots and the Decepticons from both sides. And it's fucking amazing. Very heartfelt. There's emotion in it. There's amazing action, amazing songs. Weird Al Yankovic does a song in it. And then, the most popular song is the theme. Well, the one you would say is the theme song from the whole thing, and it's Stan Bush's "The Touch," which has an amazing video. If you search for it, if you go to YouTube and you type in Stan Bush "The Touch," you'll get it, and it's interlaced with scenes from the movie, and it's so 80s, and it's an amazing song. Phenomenal. Soundtrack for sure. Little tidbit, if you don't know who Stan Bush is, first off, come on now, you're slacking. But he did the original, that song was originally for a movie starring Sylvester Stallone called Cobra, which is still one of my low-key favorite Sylvester Stallone movies, but it was originally written for that movie, and I don't know why It was never used in that one, I'm not too sure. But it was pretty fantastic of a song in its own right. But you had other ones in there too, other songs performed by Stan Bush on there. But Dare to be Stupid is the Weird Al Yankovic song that's on there, one of my favorites by him. It comes in a certain point where in the movie it makes sense. I mean, yeah, you probably could have another song in there, but young me was tremendously overjoyed the fact that Weird Al Yankovic was in the movie's sound, like in the actual movie. He wasn't. His song by him was in the movie, and eventually was on the soundtrack. It just made me so happy. Way back when I was not. At that point, I mean, I was 5 when it came out. But later on in life, when I knew what both of these things were more, and I knew Weird Al Yankovic, I was like, oh, that's fucking rad. Weird Al Yankovic is got a song in the Transformers movie. So, which they should have easily put back in the other ones, the live-action ones, but just, you know, whatever, that's just me. So, the cartoon, for the just history of the cartoon itself, the animated series, as it's known, has run its gamut. It's been redone several times in different versions. I want to see if I can get the original run here. Bum bum. Nope, that is the wrong one. Here we go. Original Transformers. I have a bunch of notes, and I moved the page around because I'm a big, stupid idiot. So, the original cartoon started in 1984, along with the comic books that were began. And the comic books have a history of their own. I'm going to get into that in a minute because I want to talk about one of my all-time favorite comic books and stuff. And I'll give you a couple extra little tidbits of cool knowledge in there, too. So, the animated series ran from the original animated series ran from 84 to 87. They did a grand total of 98 episodes. Yeah, 90 episodes. It's 4 seasons long. You can actually get them in a collection now. But it basically ran the miniseries led into the very first season, which ran 13 episodes. They supercharged the second season for 49 episodes, then the release of the feature-length movie, then season 3 did 30, and then the season 4 did a whopping 3 episodes, but it was a 3-part story that went through, and it was essentially like a miniature movie in its own right. That they did for it, which is pretty cool. But yeah, so season 4 was really just a longer or a cut up movie in a way, but was pretty awesome in its own right. Yeah, that was that's it for the TV show. Obviously the live action movies you had, you have so many of them now, it's stupid. Let's see if I can. I didn't pull it up because I wasn't really originally going to talk about them. I'm trying to see how many of these fucking things they made. They made so many. It's kind of ridiculous how many of these fucking movies they actually made. So you had Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen, Transformers: The Dark of the Moon, Transformers Age of Extinction, and Transformers The Last Night. That's 5 live-action movies, not including the prequel movie that's coming out this December, which is Bumblebee. Those are them. I'll tell you right now, I enjoyed the first 3 quite a bit. They did get terrible. Started to get pretty bad in the part of the second one, like a lot of the third one. But the worst ones were the last 2, Age of Extinction and Last Night. They were just a hodgepodge of shit. Makes me upset every day. If you listen to the regular podcast, you've heard about this before. But Bumblebee looks pretty cool. And the fact that they're using Gen 1 visuals for a lot of the Transformers you see in it, including Bumblebee. He's back to being a bug, old school bug. Optimus Prime looks like his Gen 1, which actually makes no sense for them to look like that because their scenes all take place on Cybertron. And they haven't, as far as we know, haven't come to Earth yet. And it kind of retcons, in a way, kind of retcons what you saw in the other movies. But it's okay, it doesn't matter. They look visually stunning because you see Starscream. Or no, I'm sorry, you don't see Starscream on Earth. You see a different one. I can't remember which one it is. But he looks, it's cool because it looks like a jet. But he doesn't look like a like Starscream, which was a F-15, if I'm not mistaken. This one looks like a different one. Almost like a Harrier, I think. But you have the Optimus Prime that looks like his semi-truck look. You see Soundwave, who looks like the cassette tape ninja guy who actually spits out Rampage at one point out of his ejects Rampage and turns from the cassette tape into the actual Battle Cat. You see Shockwave, who looks like he does with the weird trapezoid head with the single glowing eye. And then, of course, I said Bumblebee, and of course, the other ones you see on Earth look like them. I don't think Megatron's in it. He may be on some of the Cybertron stuff, but as far as I know, he's not. But yeah, that looks pretty cool too. As for the toys, I had a bunch of them. I had a shit ton of the toys. All my favorites. My brother and I had all the super cool ones. The only one we really wanted. That we never got because it was one of those massive ones that really, like, I don't think any of our friends actually even had it, too. Because we had a couple friends that were, like, the rich kids who got all the fucking best toys and all the big ones. They got the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier. They got all the big, big sets you'd ever see. What was the rocket ship? They had a rocket ship. G.I. Joe had a space shuttle one at one point. They had that thing. I remember one of our friends had it. I think it was Matt. Maybe it was Matt that had that one. I can't remember who it was. But there's one Transformer toy that I always wanted. And it was Ultra Magnus. Ultra Magnus was essentially like a base. And he was the base featured in the Transformers movie that, like, he was the base. And if you look it up, I'll type it in when I'm talking about it. He was pretty cool, because he was so massive. Ultra Magnus, where is he? Toy, there it is. He was a big semi-truck at one point. Maybe it wasn't Ultra Magnus. Ultra Magnus was the big truck. There was the other one. I will have to look for it. I should have looked it up earlier. Let's see. Can't remember which one it was. But they had a bunch of cool ones that I always wanted. But I can't remember. I thought it was Ultra Magnus that they had the massive fucking playset one. But maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe it's nostalgia that's getting the best of me. They did have giant versions of some of them, too. It was Metroplex. That's what it was. Metroplex was the giant, massive... he had gun turrets that came out of his knees and rocket launchers. Yeah, that's what it was. And it was one of the worst ones, I guess, really. But it was so big. It was so massive. It was ridiculous. And he didn't really transform into anything really cool, but he was very large. I don't know if it says on here his total actual size, but he turned into the base that you could actually park other Transformers on, and then he turned into a giant robot. It was pretty fucking spectacular, to tell you the truth. But yeah, it was a pretty big toy. I never had it, which always sucked. But you know, my parents, they were smarter than we were when we were kids, and they knew that was just ridiculous. Plus, we had so many other Transformers, the toys already. It was kind of fucking stupid, but pretty awesome in general. So that's it for that, for the cartoon. Comic book wise, there's been so many, and some of them are not great by any stretch of the imagination. But there's one miniseries. If you look it up, you can find it digitally now. I don't think you can find the trade for it too. I'm almost completely positive you can find the trade pretty easily. Actually, maybe not pretty easily, because it's trade changed companies quite a bit. It was a limited series by a small company which did not last long, but by a company called Dreamwave. Actually, it was a combination. It was a crossover book called Transformers G.I. Joe, and it's Transformers / G.I. Joe. And it was pretty fucking awesome of a story. And it took place in an alternate World War II, or basically alternate universe where in World War II the Cobra stumbled upon the Decepticons. They awoken them and then reformatted them into 1940s era war vehicles and weapons. And one of the coolest things about it was Megatron was found in his gun form and was holstered. He looked like a Luger, holstered in Cobra Commander's belt in a gun in a holster, and was then found out to be the leader. And he basically used them. He used Megatron to command the other Decepticons to help them. And then the G.I. Joes, who in this story were infantrymen who met the Autobots, and then they joined up to stop Cobra and the Decepticons from taking over. Because basically, with the help of the Decepticons, Cobra conquered most of Europe. And it was up to the G.I. Joes as American infantrymen and the Autobots to help save the day, basically. And that's the best one, in my opinion, of the ones I've read. And I've read a bunch of them. Trying to see if you can get that one still. I said that out. I said it like, you can totally get it. But I don't know if you can or not. I don't honestly have any idea if you can. You can find a bunch of the G.I. Joe Transformers crossovers, but none of them are as good as this one was, in my humble opinion. The art was amazing. The art was by Jay Lee. The writer, I don't really know John Nay Reybear very well. I don't know his stuff. I don't think I ever followed his real career. I know he worked on a bunch of Marvel stuff. He did a bunch of stuff for Vertigo. But I don't really know it too well. I just know it from the fact that he wrote this super awesome Transformers G.I. Joe book. I'm trying to look and see if I can find it on anything. Except for you have to spell Transformers right when you're searching for stuff. Otherwise, you're going to find some weird stuff in there. I don't think there's... Maybe not. I don't know. I should have looked this up ahead of time. I knew I was talking about this, but I never did. But you can search for yourself. It's just it's harder to find because it was and I'll get to the second part of it in a minute. It was only 6 issues for the first one, and then they planned another one that was going to be I want to say 4 issues. It might have been another 6. I can't remember what it was because it never came out. Only issue 1 did. So they did another one that was basically supposed to take place 40 years in the future, 1985, in the height of the Generation 1 Transformers, in the / modern day, and tell the story of the basically link those two, the one that took place in World War II, and then later on in the 80s with the Gen 1 cartoon and original run of Transformers, which has been pretty cool. But it did, despite selling over 44,000 copies of the first one, Dreamwave was in dire straits for finances and ended up going bankrupt, and the series was bought from them, but that particular one was never redone. But it's by far one of the best ones if you can find it. Oh no, that's Transformers versus G.I. Joe's. Man, there's so many. I should have looked this up earlier, but I didn't because I'm a bad person. But I'm sure if you look it up, you'll find it. I couldn't, but I did it in only a couple minutes. But so that was the comic book one. I wanted to mention it was just a really fun read. I enjoyed it a lot. So that's that. So if you find it, check it out. But good luck finding it nowadays. But yeah, it's really for that. And then a little fun little tidbit after the end of it is for the folks out there older like me who remember the days, you had a serious competitor, I will say, for Transformers, and they were called GoBots. GoBots were essentially the same thing as Transformers. That's why it was a competitor. And they were, nowadays you could equate them to being the knockoff brand or Walmart brand of Transformers. They were pretty generic in their own right. Their toys were kind of terrible. The actual characters were pretty fucking bad for the most part. They were, in a way, super shitty. Their names were terrible. The bad guy was called Cykill, Cy-Kill, and he was a motorcycle. You had Leader One, who was a fighter jet. He was a F-14. That could be wrong. I could be wrong about that. I think it was an F-14. Where you at, Leader One? Leader One. Transforms into... Doesn't say there. Hold on. Nope. There he goes. I should have known this, but I want to say he turns into a jet. I don't know if actually, tell you the truth, I don't know if it's actually technically supposed to be F anything. Ah, here it is. Alternate mode, he turned into an F-15 Eagle. That's what it was. And obviously he was the coolest one, really. He's the leader. Leader One, obviously, is his name. Pretty terrible fucking name, if you ask me. But, you had, they did a ton of episodes for, I don't even know if it was considered seasons, to tell you the truth. I know they did a bunch, 65 episodes, is that right? Oh, shit, I pulled up the list. 65 episodes. And Frank Welker did a voice in it. He did a bunch of the voices in it, which is crazy. But Then again, there's a lot of crossover, though, in back in the day with voiceover and cartoons, a lot of them. But Frank Welker is one of the like most well-known of the voice actors from back in the day. And it was a shame that he was never listed as a or made to do Megatron's voice in the live-action movies, because he was amazing way back in the day. But he's most well-known, besides being Megatron and a bunch of people. He was Fred from Scooby-Doo, Fred Jones. But he was... he's done shit ton of stuff. Like, a lot of Hanna-Barbera stuff. Everything Jabberjaw, Dino-Mutt, Wheelie and the Chopper Bunch. He did all versions of Scooby-Doo for, like, the longest time. He did Flintstones... He did every cartoon you can imagine. Richie Rich. He did Pac-Man, which is an amazing cartoon you've ever seen. It's fucking phenomenal. Like I said, he did Transformers. He did a ton of voices on. GoBots, he did a bunch of voices on. The Jetsons. He's done, literally a career, every year, multiple episodes of different shows. Some shows you've never heard of. Some shows that you think you might have heard of. But Frank Welker is a huge, still active to this day. He still does Fred Jones in every version of Scooby-Doo. He does Scooby-Doo's voice now, too. But every version of a Scooby-Doo they do, Frank Welker is attached to it. He might have to do it now. I don't know. Film-wise, he's been, he does animal voices a lot, in a lot of stuff. He does Scooby-Doo's voice, but one of my favorite ones is the fact that he does Cujo from the movie Cujo. That's right, he is the dog in Cujo. It is so weird that he does that, but he does. He was in Aladdin. He played Abu in that. That's Aladdin's monkey friend. He did the alien voices from Independence Day. I mean, Frank Welker is, I think, probably one of the most well-known, but also not one of the most well-known. But in the original Transformers movies, the live-action movies, Megatron was voiced by Hugo Weaving. Right? Hugo Weaving? Yes, Hugo Weaving. I had to think about that. I literally just looked it up. Frank Welker actually did, unfortunately, the voice for Megatron in Last Night, and he did the voice for Galvatron, who is the man-made version of Megatron. It's fucking dumb. I hate it. Anyways, he did the voice for Galvatron in that, but he did a bunch of the voices in Transformers, the first one, the live-action one in 2007. He did not work in 2007. He worked on Dark of the Moon, and Revenge of the Fallen, but I do not believe he worked on the original. But he did everybody except for the voice he made famous, which is Megatron. He did Starscream. Soundwave, Shockwave, Barricade, Devastator, Grinder, Reap Man, Ravage, Galvatron and Megatron in the last two. He's done video games. He's done direct-to-DVD stuff. I mean, Frank Welker is fucking... He's one of the most prolific ones, and he's fantastic at everything. DuckTales. I mean, he's done so many things. Anyhow, that's Frank Welker. I don't need to talk anymore about that nonsense. He's really good. You should know him. Oh, you do know him, and you just don't know you know him. But if you talk to any voice actors, anybody who knows that, they definitely know who Frank Welker is, and the fact that he's been working literally since, 1970 was his first work. 69, sorry. Original Scooby-Doo series in 1969 was his very first voice acting anything he did, which is crazy to think about, but dude's been working for 40 years. Nope, that's 50 years. I don't know how to do math. Almost 50 years. It's a lot of time doing voice stuff and still working, by the way. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's doing the same thing over and over again, but fuck, man, he's got to be making a ton of money. Yeah, that's it. That's it for the Transformers stuff, I think. Oh, GoBots. I was going to say, the cool thing about GoBots, it was a fun one. They made two movies. They did Challenge of the GoBots. Well, Challenge of the GoBots was the name of the main show that they did. And then they had GoBots Battle of the Rock Lords was the movie. Right? Was it one movie? Well, there's the very first movie, which was called Battle of the GoBots, or Battle for Gobotron, which is a fucking terrible name, was then split into five parts, or maybe later on made into a movie. I couldn't remember. I don't remember actually how it worked. I just know they made, I want to say, they made one full-length movie. Yeah, feature-length movie. One feature-length movie. Called GoBots Battle of the Rock Lords, and that one was pretty fun too. Then later on, when this is a fun part, this is a fun thing. When Hasbro gobbled up the company who made the toys, they got the intellectual property for it, and they actually folded them into the Transformers universe and made it an alternate universe. That they were essentially that alternate version, or that alternate universe's versions of the Transformers. Interesting little thing I thought I'd throw in there. Pretty fun little tidbit of knowledge as well. Pretty fun on there. Yeah, that's I think that's gonna be all for that. I think. Trying to look at all my notes here, but I don't know if I have any more. Yep, that's about it. Oh, Tonka, who made GoBots. So after, Hasbro bought Tonka in 91, they, merged the universes for Challenge of the GoBots and Transformers and made it a alternate universe within the Transformers universe. That's a pretty interesting little tidbit for you there if you don't know what that is. And if you look up GoBots, you'll see it was much inferior to Transformers, but maybe that's just my opinion. Probably not, because they didn't last long. That's it for that. As for what I'm reading, I started... Well, I finished the... I told you last week I was finishing the third book in the John Scalzi Old Man's War book. So I read that. I finished that. I told you. I think I told you all about that one last week. I could be wrong. Maybe I didn't. But I started reading Mortal Engines. Sheerly due to the fact that the movie is coming out. I had seen this before. I've heard of it. Never read it. Not because I wasn't interested. It was just... I never got to it, I guess, really, is what I should say. Mortal Engines is the first book in a series of four books called the Mortal Engines Quartet, which includes... four books. I don't know why I even had to say that last part. That makes me sound like I'm talking down to you, and I'm not talking down to you. But it's a post-apocalyptic steampunkish type world that exists. I don't know how else to put that. The four books. If I can find the list that I originally had, I closed a bunch of tabs by accident because, again, I'm a big dumb idiot who doesn't pay attention to what he's doing. Yep, there it is. There it is. Haha. You have Mortal Engines, Predator's Gold, Infernal Devices and A Darkening Plane. I didn't know anything about them until I heard Peter Jackson was doing a live action version of Mortal Engines, which is the very first book in the series. And so I was like, I'll eventually check it out. And I threw it on my wish list to remember it, because that's how I remember books I want to read. So it's actually a really fun book. Very interesting book itself. I don't want to give any away, but I'll say a couple things. If you don't know what Mortal Engine is, it's this this era known as the Traction Era. It's in the distant future, where basically after hundreds of years of polluting the planet and using of the resources, there's a bunch of natural disasters that happen: super volcanoes, earthquakes that basically shatter and threaten to break apart continents, which is, insane to think about. But they're continent-shaking earthquakes. They're massive, tidal waves, all sorts of stuff. So this guy, this engineer, he designs the very first... he basically designs the plan to mobilize cities known as traction cities. And he basically... The main one that we know about, I know about because I've only read the first book. And I'm almost done with it, and I know from the trailers and stuff I've read about the movie. It takes place in London, and London is a 7-tier. That could be wrong, but I think it's 7 tiers tall, and it's the city, all of London, stacked on top of itself on these giant movable cities. And their whole thing is they have a thing called municipal Darwinism. And municipal Darwinism is basically the stronger will prevail. So basically the strong will prey on the weak and they'll eat them and then survive on them. So what that basically means is the cities have these giant machines underneath them, which I think is what Mortal Engines is. I don't know if that's been clarified. Maybe I missed that. Doesn't actually matter. But they're on these giant... caterpillar tracks, and they have these big jaws that open up that will bring in prey cities, like smaller towns and smaller cities, rip them apart, dismantle them, and use the parts to repair their own vehicle, their own town, as well as for fuel and for spare parts. And then as an aftermath, they then take any technology or goods they have, and they keep it from themselves. And there's essentially 4 factions, or guilds as they call them, that run the city. And I don't know if it's the same for all the guilds, or all the cities that are in there, but I do know that these 4 guilds are what run and have a hierarchy through the city. It's very interesting. You have the 4 major guilds, which are the engineers, the historians, the navigators, and the merchants. And they are for this. So basically, the names are pretty self-explanatory what they do as a guild. So the engineers are the ones who maintain and build and improve the mobile cities. You have the historians who are there to record history. They run the museums. They write the books to teach about history. You have the navigators who are, responsible for steering and plotting courses for London. Then you have the merchants who are in charge of running and keeping London's economy running. They make money. They do the taxes, all that fun stuff. if you associate with merchants, as is the and then they have a mayor who's referred to as Lord Mayor. He's Magnus Chrome. A lot of the names are crazy in this book. Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. It's a pretty fun book. And it's a pretty... There's a lot of death in it. A lot of violent death, too. But they have... they have the mobile cities. There's airships. There's a thing... There's a group called the Anti-Traction League, who is against mobile cities and the destruction that they bring about to the land. And so they are essentially the... I mean, they're the Anti-Traction League, so, you know, they're the group that goes against the main... all the different cities that are out there. You have pirates in as well as two pirate cities, or pirate suburbs, as one of them is referred to. Really cool book. So it's gonna... I'm really excited about the movie, because it looks gorgeous. It's Peter Jackson, of course, so you know it's gonna be pretty cool, visually stunning. If you haven't seen the trailers, it's pretty awesome. One glaring thing that I would like to bring up, though, because again, I didn't read the books when they first came out. They were published... the first one came out in 2001. The last one came out in 2006. So Mortal Engines is the first one. That's why I started with that one. The biggest glaring difference I know right away, just from the trailers I've seen and have read the book, almost completely finished the book, is this. The main glaring thing I've noticed is in the trailers, there's a young lady who they focus a lot on, whose name is Hester Shaw. Hester Shaw is, as far as I know, the main character in the book, in the movie. In the book, it's slightly different. She shares top billing with Tom. And I don't know... Again, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know how they're changing it. I do know a couple of things that I've noticed, but I'll get to my glaring thing in a minute. It looks like, to me, the movie, Hugo Weaving plays a character by the name of Thaddeus Valentine, who is the lead, the head of the Historians Guild, and is kind of the antagonist for the most part for the movie, I think, because the other person that's in it, or the other protagonist from the book, who is the... Lord Mayor, I don't think is in it, and I could be wrong. I haven't seen I don't think we've seen the full cast list just yet. But that's one of the things I noticed, is the trailers make you think there's a lead, there's a male and female lead, but the trailers kind of, and even the posters give you an idea that Hester Shaw is the main protagonist. I said antagonist earlier, or protagonist. She's a protagonist, but Tom Natsworthy, who's the male lead in the movie, as well as the male lead in the book. The book, for the most part, the first book, is mainly from his point of view. So it's very interesting to see. It's going to be very interesting to see. The glaring thing, though, that I picked up right away, because the way the book starts, is Hester Shaw is scarred. She's disfigured. In the trailers for the movie, she has a pretty gnarly scar that goes across half her face, that it kind of makes her almost, I don't want to say two-faced, because it's not completely wrecked, but it's pretty bad. The book, on the other hand, she is massively disfigured. She's missing an eye, she's missing a nose, her mouth is crooked, her whole face is just a webbing of scar. It's crazy to think about how they have it in the book, and knowing what it's in the movie, it doesn't look like that. I was like, wow, they obviously didn't want her to, look fucking hideous, because the young lady, Hera Helmer, who they have playing her, is very attractive. I don't know if I know her from anything, really. I'm looking at the list of stuff. She was in the recurring role in Da Vinci's Demons, but that's about it. I'm really seeing in there. If you look up Mortal Engines and the description given of Hester Shaw, it's drastically different from the way they talk about her, and the way they describe her and how everyone reacts to her, is fucking nuts how different it actually is. And the fact that in the trailers, I can't really tell if Magnus Chrome is in it at all, which makes me think that they lumped a lot of his villainy into Thaddeus Valentine's character. And he could, but I don't, like I said, I don't know how that all works out just yet. I'm trying to look through the listing they have, like, oh, also these people, but I don't know if if anybody plays him or not. I don't know, but it's pretty interesting. But there's a lot of cool stuff. The book's really, really fun. It's very weirdly written because it jumps from points of view in the same chapter, so you hear what certain characters are thinking when your point of view is kind of from one person. But anyways, it's not enough to make me like, oh, this is not well written. It's just very bizarrely story told. And they have a really cool science in the book. Like, the science fiction stuff from it is pretty cool. With the cities themselves and the airships and the flying city they have in it, and pretty neat little world, kind of fucked up world in general, but still pretty fun looking. And the movie looks amazing. The book is pretty entertaining. I'll probably, depending on how this goes, and I'm pretty sure at the end of it so far, I'm probably gonna read the other three books just because I really want to know how they're going to go about these things. But yeah, that's it for this week's episode. Super long episode this week. I'm sorry, guys. Actually, I'm not. I don't care. I do care about you. I'm just going to keep talking until I'm done. So if it's a long episode, it's a long episode. If it's a short episode, lucky you. Anyhow, that's it for this week's episode, everybody. We were talking about Transformers, the awesome cartoon, and the awesome toys. And as usual... tune in next week while I be talking about the awesome cartoon and awesome toys of G.I. Joe. And I will hit the movies. I'm sure a lot of you are wondering. I will lambast on those garbage movies. Anyhow, that's it for this week's episode. I don't like to talk about negative stuff on this podcast. I like to focus on the awesome stuff. Hence the name. But anyways, that's it for this week's episode of The Awesome with Cody. Again, I'm your host, Cody. We were talking about Transformers. And as usual... let's be awesome.